Today's episode of Locked On Phoenix Suns is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code Locked On, and you'll get 20% off your next order.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Another great Suns win to talk about, as well as some big picture thoughts now that we are about a month almost into the Suns season here on today's Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On PHX Suns, and you can follow me on Twitter at Brendan Kleen 14. Because it is Monday, we are also joined by Brandon, aka Zona, on Twitter, who you can follow at AZ Sports Zone. Brandon, you said you've been up north this weekend. How's that been? I'm kind of jealous.
Oh, yeah. It's very cold and good to get out of, I've been stuck in Phoenix for a while now, so just good to get out and get some scenic views. And also helps to see the Suns win after a very disappointing loss the other night. But I'm happy to be back on here.
Yeah, it's a lot to talk about. They keep pushing all these games to the weekend where we have too much to keep track of. So we're not going to hit on the Pistons game too much, guys, because, even Monty said after they looked at the tape, he thought at first that the zone that Detroit threw at them maybe got them off guard, or, you know, there were some things that they really struggled with. And then he kind of came back and said, no, we were generating good offense. We just got a little bit cold from three. Booker had some turnovers. Free throw shooting was really weird. I think they went 4 of 10, if I'm remembering correctly, after missing their first six. So just a weird one. But they rebounded and came back to beat the Pacers on Saturday night. We are recording this here Sunday morning. They won 125-117 on the second night of a back-to-back in Indiana. A really big win, all things considered. This was a battle for the best record in the NBA, a battle of maybe the two most surprising teams through the first few weeks of this NBA season, and an interesting test for the Suns, because if there's anything to take away from that Pistons game, Brandon, it was that they struggled with the size that Detroit brought onto the floor. They had to kind of adjust. They didn't do it very well. Jay Crowder had a poor game. So going into Indiana, which is kind of the premier big team in the NBA that forces you to adjust if you're not careful, that was kind of what the spotlight was on. And they, in my opinion, sort of responded by playing their own game. And pregame, Monty hinted at maybe going with Damian Jones or Etuan Moore with campaign out, and we didn't really see that. We saw them basically stick to the same game plan that's worked for them here to get them to 7-3, and they just sort of took care of business against a great Pacers team.
Yeah, I was definitely pleasantly surprised by the rotation, especially with those pregame quotes that were thrown out by Monty. I'd be happy if Damian Jones never played another meaningful minute. But yeah, I think they just need to make teams adjust to how they play, because they're at their best with Ayton surrounded by wings and, Dario as a backup center obviously has thrived. So I don't think there's any reason to go with the two bigs. The only exception would probably be if you're for a small stint against a team that's just killing you inside and your offense isn't responding and you need to make a switch, then that's understandable. But for the most part, you want teams to adjust to you. If you get too caught up in trying to be someone you're not, it's not going to work out. And the Suns are not a big team. They're not going to play that way. So I'm really glad Monty stuck with the rotation he did. And that's a huge win. That loss against Detroit looks so much worse if they come out flat the next day. So the fact that they're locked in, ready to go against a very good fundamental Indiana team speaks volumes about how different this Suns team truly is.
We saw them have, I actually went back and looked, they were only 500, or not only, they were surprisingly good, a 500 record on the road last year, which is really solid for such a young team last season with really only Rubio and Baines as the veterans in the rotation. And that surprised me to look back at. I remember them having some duds on the road for sure. Like that Hornets game where they had to come back and Oubre had to hit the big three to win it after they gave up a lead. And it felt like they had a lot of nights like that Pistons game last year, and not as many like this one where they went out and just completely took care of business. Now, obviously, they're a better team, but this was a nice night to see them prove it. The big story, and we'll get into more of the size stuff and some lessons we might have learned. We did see Ayton and Saric play together for the first time for some extended stretch in these two. So we'll talk about that, and we'll hit on Bridges and Johnson, their development. But we have to start with Bridges here just in the context of this game, I think, because he came out and scored, I believe, 7 or 8 of the Suns' first 10 points and was just a nightmare off the ball for the Pacers to deal with, which is a really good way to beat their defense, because the reason they've been so successful defensively is, you know, they're really smart about pressuring the ball. They have size, they have chemistry. And so if you're able to just relocate behind the arc, cut, things like that, that's how you're going to beat them. And the Suns came out and did that, even Devin Booker getting involved that way, but felt like Bridges really set the tone.
Yeah, definitely. He's just always in the right place at the right time. And that's just that high basketball IQ that he has. You know, him and Cam Johnson both are like that. They just know where to be. And they each, I think, combined for like 18 three-point attempts last night and both shot at a high percent. So anytime that happens, you know, it's going to be a good night. And I'm just really happy for Mikal because, you know, he's come so far from just his rookie season, even like early on in his sophomore year. There are a lot of Suns fans that were already giving up on him, and I've not forgot. I have all the receipts, so I need all of you to apologize. But yeah, he's becoming a two-way star right before our eyes, and he doesn't even need to be elite offensively. If he's just above average and can make defenses guard him, he's going to be such a good player. Just, I would say, a top 50 player, just because of his defensive impact and just all the little things he does, just that don't show up on the box score. So. It's really good to see him put it all together. And I love that post-game interview by Chris Paul, just talking about how, you know, great of a guy he is.
Yeah, it says a lot that not only did Paul say that, but that he's already feeling that way after, 2 months, 3 months of even being around the guy. So that's exactly. pretty promising for how Paul is kind of taking to this group that the Suns put together before he got here. But the other couple things I wanted to hit on, the rebounding, just because it is such a strength for the Pacers. They had 13 offensive rebounds. Sabonis had 7. Sabonis, even though it felt like the Suns kind of got the Pacers out of their comfort zone a little bit, Sabonis still, you look at the stat line, 28, 22, and 4, and obviously plays 41 minutes, so some of those counting stats are going to just be inflated there. But one thing Monty emphasized going into this game, and just especially coming out of the Pistons game and over the course of the whole season, even really dating back to last year, is that he really needs the guards to chip in on the glass, because they don't play very big and they don't have that traditional, you know, Gobert. Ayton is a great rebounder, but he's not like quite the same size and length as some of the best centers in the entire NBA. So they're going to need that to happen. We saw Crowder go in there and get 8. We saw the guards at least chip in. I saw Carter box out Sabonis once. He got 3 boards. It felt like you can't keep those guys off the glass. They combined for 32 and 11 offensive rebounds, Turner and Sabonis, but they did just enough to make it so that it wasn't like they were controlling the game that way.
Yeah, definitely. Sabonis is just, he's so good at that too. Like, he just kind of like Mikal, except on the offensive glass, he just knows where to be. And he carves out space. He's not like super athletic, but he's just like a monster on the glass. So, but yeah, against bigger teams, I think, especially when Ayton has to like help out on the perimeter, they're going to need players to step up on the glass, because we see oftentimes if he's not like down there to secure it, like more times than not, that like the opponent's going to grab the offensive rebound and go right back up with it. So they just need to really all invest in just boxing out, especially when Ayton's like, you know, guarding someone on the perimeter on a switch, or, you know, just not in the area. And even when he's off the court with Dario, you know, he carves out a bunch of space, but he's also not a vertical athlete. So, you know, the rebounding could be kind of a common issue for this team throughout the year, but I don't think it'll be something that, you know, kills them ultimately.
Yeah. If you're a good team, it shouldn't it shouldn't, right? Like, you know, if you're able to make threes, you have creation, you have a good defense, like rebounding is not something that impacts the game to that level. And we saw that, like the Pacers, I think that's something the Pacers struggle with in the inverse, where having that as one of the best things about you as a team can't necessarily be like the thing that propels you to being an elite overall squad. I tweeted a video of an example of that where it ended up where Booker was really the only guy left in the paint. Ayton didn't put a body on Turner, and Booker was the only guy left to box him out, and Turner literally kind of just threw him to the side. And I mean, Devin Booker's not a weak guy by any means, so it just kind of shows that they're going to need to do it by committee. And so something to keep an eye on. We'll talk about some of the more of that size stuff as we finish out the show, but next we want to hit on, I don't even know, it feels like no term, no phrase is enough to describe the leap that Bridges and Johnson have made this year, seemingly. And so we'll break that down in the next segment, but first I want to tell you about the sponsor of today's show, which is Built Bar. I went out to South Mountain, like Brandon, trying to take advantage of the weather, get out and not be stuck at home anymore, and had to take a crappy protein bar that I didn't like because I wasn't stocked up on Built Bars. You guys know Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever, 18 flavors now and growing, all of them covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew, great for anybody who's trying to lose or maintain weight, and anyone who's just health conscious. It's a nice snack. It's a nice pick-me-up after a workout. It's a nice way to add some calories and protein into your body without stuffing yourself or having to choke down something that tastes disgusting. No lie, I really did go place an order on Built Bar after I got home because I realized that I was just tired of the other stuff that I had in the pantry, and I really needed something better. Right now, while supplies last, with every purchase, Built Bar is also giving away a free cooler. So, to take advantage, try out Built Bar if you haven't, or get that restock if you need it. Go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, the name of our network, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON at checkout for 20% off at builtbar.com. Back here with Brandon, every single Monday, we will be here breaking down games, big picture stuff, the development of this group, what comes next, whatever strikes our fancy. But today it just feels like we have to talk about Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, who combined for 50 points on 10 of 18 shooting from three, 18 of 31 shooting overall, and continue to just be two guys that are among the most consistent on this roster, although Bridges did have a couple of quiet nights last week. And I don't know, man. Like, to me, it just feels like they're making me sort of think about the draft a lot, because they were both players who obviously, you know, the book on them was that they were panned for being older prospects and not having a lot of room to grow. And in their first contracts, both guys seem to just be improving by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, Mikal, I was super high on him coming out of Villanova, despite his age. Just the like trajectory of his like growth as a redshirt freshman, and then just getting better and better every year until he was just historically good as a college player. You know, sometimes like three and D,
then his teammate wins Player of the Year.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes like 3 and D players are kind of put in a box as like, oh, this guy is just a role player. And especially when they're older, but just whenever you see their like trajectory of their growth rate, and it's at the rate it was with Mikal, it's like, this guy has some stuff. Like I don't think he's done yet. And we've already seen in the NBA, just his leap from even last year to this year has been massive. And the crazy part is he's still only shooting 52% on twos, and he's much better than that. Like last year he was 61%. So obviously the three-point shooting has increased both by volume and percent. So that's why he's at 15.2 points per game right now. But like, I don't even think he's at his peak. I think he'll bump that up. And if he can get you like 16 to 18 a game and play the defense he does, I mean, he's going to be one of the best players in the league. And I don't think he's anywhere close to his prime yet either. Like, he's showing us new stuff every day, like the pull-ups. And it really just comes with confidence too. And like his ability to drive and just his arms, like sometimes I think he forgets how long they are, because like whenever he just makes up his mind and he just drives and attacks and just like reaches his arm out like that dunk he had early in the game against Indiana. I was just like, oh. And I think he has an extra
2 feet to him past wherever he is on the actual court or more.
Yeah. And once he realizes like how to use that more often to his advantage, I think he's going to be able to, especially if he's shooting 40%+ from three, defenses are going to, you know, close that hard on him, and he's going to get that lane all day. And same with Cam, like Cam's starting to figure out teams think he's just a shooter, and they're going to have to adjust to that pretty soon because he can do so much more. And that step back he had just like was ridiculous. So I think there's flashes of both these guys. Like, yeah, sure, they're older for, you know, the standards of how long they've been in the league and all that. But I think they're both still not even close to like what they can be. And that should be pretty scary for the rest of the league, just because, you know, you already have Booker and Ayton as your two like main foundation pieces. And these guys are supposed to be your role players. Like, I don't think they're role players. I think they're going to be key contributors that, you know, I think Mikal has all-star potential just because of how good he is on both ends and the improvement on both ends. So, and Cam, like if he can add some more off the dribble shooting, he's going like at his size, it's just one of the prettiest strokes I've ever seen. So I think, you know, the ceiling is the roof, as some would say, but I really do think the upside of these two are like a lot more than they get credit for by the national media. But I think that'll start to catch up as more people watch Suns games.
It made me think about the draft, like I said, but it also made me feel like you have to give a ton of credit to the front office and the coaching staff here, because, you know, it is, I mean, it's obvious that it's a little bit of a risk if you take a player who doesn't have much room to grow, and then you're kind of stuck with somebody who's, you know, like you said, a relatively replaceable role player. But to continue to build on these guys, or to see skills that can be groomed in the NBA, things like that, that make them more than what their kind of perception is as they're drafted, that takes some doing. And, you know, I think some would argue it's harder. It's harder to make those guys better than good role players than maybe it is to make like Anthony Edwards, you know, do some fun stuff as a rookie. Like that's about, you know, grooming decision making and just kind of adjusting the NBA. But getting Cam to build on a skill set that he's already had for 5 years in college is, you know, that's a different sort of thing. So I feel like the coaching staff and the front office deserve some credit there as well, and the system too, because we're seeing like Cam had 4 assists last night, and you talked about those guys attacking closeouts and the lanes that are going to be open to them because of not only their shooting but just the overall spacing this team can create. It's also they're taking advantage of it as passers, and that's really impressive to see. I mean, some of that is just having a high basketball IQ, knowing the system, knowing your teammates. You don't have to be like, you know, Ricky Rubio to create assists, but there's something to be said for them recognizing those situations and advantages and knowing the system so well too. And those are two of the guys that were around last year, of course, to have that stability internally. So I wanted to read, because you talked about receipts. I have receipts. I wrote about Mikal Bridges in March of 2019, and the entire, it was a whole profile. I got to sit down with him for like an hour. I talked to his coaching staff from college, talked to plenty of people, his mom, and so much of what I wrote then, or that he said then, more specifically, feels so relevant right now. Baker Dunleavy, who was an assistant at Villanova, said he's got a sneaky level of confidence. He knows he's really good. He's just not arrogant about it. And I think if you ask anyone on our staff, he surprised maybe even himself with how quickly he developed. I think that we all thought that it might take a little bit longer. Then Bridges said, talking about how he learned to score, he said, "When I got older in college and became like a go-to guy, I knew how to be effective in a game without having the ball in my hands. I don't have to be the type of guy to go get 20 pounding the ball 100 times. I don't even have to dribble the ball in a possession to score." Then he said about when he sort of, like you talked about, he took kind of a little while, then got acclimated, and then really was dominant his last couple of seasons in college. He said, "I've seen it since I was a freshman, and when it was my year to be that guy, I kind of just knew now it's my time, and I know what I have to do, and I got to work even harder to lead this team." And it feels like, too, you know, in some ways, the system that the Suns are running and sort of the personality of the team, it feels like it comes from Bridges quite a bit as well, in terms of Monty said pregame yesterday that some reporter was naming off the leaders of this group. They said Chris, Devin, Jay, whoever they said, and then Monty like interrupted them to say you have to include Mikhail in that group. So the fact that he has taken this team sort of as a leader by example, the fact that Chris Paul talked about how good of a guy he is, and the fact that it seems like this is the year, like we saw in college, where Bridges is really stepping up and realizing that he has to be a little bit more, that's all really impressive to me as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think just seeing him in different contexts too in college, you know, in different roles, that's kind of like weighed into like how I evaluate prospects too. Because like if you're drafting someone that they've been the guy the whole time, like throughout high school and college, and they come to the NBA and you're not planning on using them as like your main option, they're going to struggle to figure out like what their main role is and finding their identity. And that's kind of what we saw with like Josh Jackson. Like he's always been kind of handed the keys to whatever, wherever he's gone. And that's why like a lot of fans wanted him to be what Mikal is right now. And I think Mikal's done so well and been able to gradually grow, because that's exactly what he did in college. Like you can look at his NBA, the start to his career, and it's pretty much identical to his college season, like from freshman to his junior year. But I think as long as he just keeps like the confidence up offensively, that's his main thing. Because whenever he's confident, I don't think he understands like people can't guard him, and his shot is like impossible to block. Like when he makes up his mind, he's just going to shoot it. And then off the dribble, like I said, just the go-go gadget arms that can just finish over everything. And he's only going to get better. And I think just learning how to play off the ball and how to not like not be the main option really helped his growth, and playing next to a guy like Devin Booker. So that's one thing to take into account. So that's a really good point and article that you referenced there.
Yeah, Josh Jackson, who, by the way, got benched in his first game back from injury on Friday when the Suns played the Pistons. But that's its own story that I guess Suns fans no longer have to worry about. The thing I wanted to ask you about Cam, to close on him for a sec here, is do you think, like, where would you put the odds that on the first night of the playoffs, if the Suns make the playoffs, Cam is the starter for this team, like by the end of the season, that he takes that role from Crowder? Do you think there's a chance that happens? Do you think Monty prefers just having Crowder with the starters, even though Cam plays more minutes than him sometimes? Where do you see that balance, and does it matter to you?
So it's definitely a possibility. I do think it will depend on matchups too, because obviously Crowder can guard the bigger forwards. So if there's a certain forward on the team they're playing in the playoffs that, you know, they want Jay to guard, then I think Cam will probably still come off the bench. But if there's a point of the season where Cam just takes that starting role outright, then, and they might not make any adjustments in the playoffs to start, they might just roll with that five. So I'd put it close to like 50-50. And I think if Cam can, like, he's too selfless to do this, but I want him to shoot 10 threes every game. Like he needs to be that confident in his shot. Like they need to almost not use him in like a Duncan Robinson way, but sort of, because I think he could do more off the dribble, obviously, and he has more to his game. But like, I just want him to, you know, anytime he shoots 10 plus threes, I'm very happy. And, especially, you know, Jay Crowder, he's very hit or miss offensively, but at least, you know, with him, like he's going to play hard and he does the little things. So I could see Monty just sticking with this five and just letting them, you know, get time to like mesh. But if Cam just plays so well that they, and like with the starters too, that they can't like keep him off the floor and they need to start him, then it wouldn't shock me at all.
Yeah. Well, you see too, like obviously the mantra is it doesn't necessarily matter who starts, it matters who finishes. And we've seen Cam play, you know, at the end of games. We've seen Monty's good about getting Cam and Mikhail on the floor together with Crowder off the floor, with any assortment of guys, but those two forwards play together a lot, which I think Monty has made a priority. And like I said, Cam's playing more minutes, like this game against the Pacers. Cam played 29, Crowder played 27. But I agree with you, like whatever was in his head after he passed up that wide open three at the top of the arc and Paul kind of stared a dagger at him, and then he came back and hit that step back just to say, like, yeah, I can do this, don't worry. Whatever was going on in his head then, like, replicate that for the whole time you're in the game. And not necessarily taking step backs every time down the floor, but whatever that aggressiveness or, like, I got to prove myself mentality that he took on in that moment, like, that's what he needs to play with. Not that he's not effective the way he's playing right now, but I agree with you. Like, there are times where it feels like he's selfless a little bit too much, or there are times where he's, not realizing that his own three, relatively open three, is the best shot in a possession, you know? And like the same type of mentality that he, when he took the spot up three from the logo over Doug McDermott in that same Pacers game. Like, those are the shots that I just feel like if we saw those, as long as the coaching staff's giving him the wiggle room to make those mistakes and be free to miss some of those, like, I think it will help his confidence and his, sort of sense of self as he goes forward in his career. But yeah, both of these guys are playing incredibly so far this year. And then to have Crowder, who's like maybe one of the better role players in the NBA himself, on top of those two, is just a ridiculous rotation right now. But let's close with a little more talk on Crowder, actually, because he did struggle in that Pistons game and has a little bit of a role to play in terms of the Suns' maneuverability from a size perspective. And we're going to close on that. But first, the second sponsor of today's show. We're recording this before the Sunday football games, but by the time you hear this, the odds will already be up for the divisional round weekend. You have just enough time to continue betting on the college football playoff national championship game. And there's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust. That is betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Brandon, who do you like for the college basketball national championship this year? The odds are already up.
Oh, Gonzaga for sure. I think they are.
You got to have a sleeper. People aren't going to go bet on Gonzaga. Okay, the money's too good.
Sleeper. I would say I'm not sure like what their odds are right now, but Tennessee is a team I really like. They have a really nice like blend of experience and like some youth, and they were like preseason, I would have bet on them. I know they're doing a little bit better now, and they're probably, I think they're top 10 at this point, but Tennessee is probably one of the best bets.
Yeah, they were.
I would
go for it.
I was just going to say, I would probably, like, if I was going to put my money for a value pick, I'd probably go with them at this point.
That was my sneaky one last week as well. Let's see where the odds are on them now. They are plus 1,200. So there you go. From us to you, get the money now, because like Brandon said, they are sort of surging. And if they end up with a decently high seed, they're not going to be that good of odds when March hits. So don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. And don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Closing out the show here, talking size, talking Ayton Sharić, Crowder, how they can combine and adapt over the course of the season, maybe into the playoffs here for the Suns. And if you're in a betting mood, don't forget to check out as well Locked On Bets, the newest show on the network where your boy Q and Lee Sterling get you ready every morning, 15 to 20 minutes. They rank the best bets of the day. They have levels of locks. They have upset specials, all the best stuff to get you a little bit richer every single day. So check out Locked On Bets. Okay, so the first thing I want to hit here when it comes to the front court, Brandon, is I feel like they're, you know, I get why to some extent, but it feels like Sharić just isn't playing enough. Like, he's been so good, and I get he went 2 of 7 for 4 points yesterday, but I tweeted there was like a 6 to 8 minute stretch, maybe shorter, in the third quarter where he was just outplaying Miles Turner. Like, I think he's one of the 5 or 6 best players on this team, and I get that that's a really stacked top 5 or 6, but is there any way they can get him more minutes?
Yeah, it's tough because when DeAndre stays out of foul trouble, either you're gonna have to make a decision of playing him with Ayton, or giving Ayton like less burn, but just making sure, like, what I would do is just like tell DeAndre you're going to get 30, 32 minutes a night, and you just need to play as hard as you can, because we're going to get you rest, and Dario's going to come in. Because I agree, he needs to at least approach 20 minutes a game at the least. I think he was at 17 last game. Is not ideal, and I think it helps with his confidence too. Like, we've seen the more Dario plays, the better, and like that's pretty obvious with most players in the NBA. But for him, he's very like rhythm, like game. He just needs to get like the rhythm of the game to get in the flow. And mm-hmm. I don't really think he had a fair chance, I guess, to do that last night. He looked really well, like you said, in the stretches, but offensively, he didn't really get a chance to like kind of, you know, show what he's shown, especially like in the bubble and early on in the season as well. So finding minutes for him, either you're gonna have to cut a little bit out of Ayton or play them together, but I think it's a good problem to have, because just, you know, the versatility on this team, I would say the big depth is like a little bit shaky if one of those two are out, but when they're both healthy, I think it's a good situation to be in.
It's a luxury for sure, and like, you know, if assuming that the Suns eventually catch the bug that everybody is going to catch at some point in the NBA in terms of not only injuries, but obviously COVID, which is already decimating a lot of rosters around the league, then having a starter or fringe starter caliber player like Šarić on the roster where you can plug him in as a starter and not feel like you're just going to lose a game, that's definitely good. And to have the sort of flexibility where I think it was, again, at the end of that third quarter, maybe early fourth quarter, where Sabonis was just really going off and scoring. Šarić could not contain him. They put Ayton back in the game and kept Šarić in and went to that too big look. And I don't know if it was more on Sabonis for not continuing to try to get his offense, or if it was that the Pacers were genuinely like scared off from going to just ISOing Sabonis that they went away from it. But whatever it was, that change with putting both of those guys on the floor, Sabonis quieted down and the Suns kind of pulled away right after that and didn't really give up the lead again. So it is something that I think they can go to in spurts, where if Šarić is getting the 16 or so minutes, 16 to 18 as Ayton's backup, plus a few here and there together, if the matchup calls for it, then, you know, that's 20 for Šarić. And I think that's reasonable. Like, he is only making, you know, less than $10 million, and he's not a two-way traditional center type player. He's a backup, so that's fine. But it just feels like there's nights where even when he's playing well, they can't really find way to reward him for that. And that's more what I was referencing. Yeah. But, you know, maybe that's just the nature of things. What did you see from Crowder against the Pistons that made him struggle so much?
I think he's just a very streaky player. Like, we've already kind of seen that early throughout the year. Like, when he's on, he can't miss, and then kind of like it goes the other way as well. So I think the entire thing was just like they jumped out to that early lead and they thought they could kind of coast and just kept jacking up threes, and they just weren't falling. And Detroit just kind of slowly chipped away at it. And after that hot start, they really never found a rhythm. So I think a lot of it was just kind of everyone was like out of whack, and Crowder just, you know, I don't know. He's offensively, I've heard this from many fans of teams that, you know, had him in the past. They've said there are nights where he's just not going to show up offensively. He's always going to play hard on defense and do the little things right. But, you know, sometimes he's just not going to have it. But when he does, you know, he changes the game. So I think that's why having Cam Johnson off the bench is such a luxury, because when he's having those off nights or struggling, you can always put Cam in. And we saw, obviously, he had more minutes than Jay by a couple last night. But I think with him, it's just finding that rhythm and that confidence early, and then it just kind of clicks throughout the rest of the game.
What do you think about, you know, if they do have some injuries, if the front court rotation gets thinned out a little bit? Like, we know Damian Jones is there, but I think we both agree that is one of those things where if he's having to play, you're worried about him costing you the game. Kaminsky is below replacement level, but not terrible. Would you, like, going into the season, I felt like somebody like a JaVale McGee, who might be a buyout candidate, or a player like that might be somebody the Suns could keep an eye on heading into the buyout market, or, you know, maybe a small trade at the end of the trade deadline. Like, is that something you think would be worthwhile to look into, or do you feel comfortable with where they are right now with this group?
I think they definitely need another big, and I think they will, like, So here's the thing. If something happens to Ayton or Saric where they miss a couple of games and like they feel like just like the struggle of, you know, the thin like bench depth for the bigs, then I think that could like make them more likely to go and pursue someone. But if they stay healthy throughout the year and like they're not having those issues, then they may feel less inclined and just feel comfortable with Frank and Damian. But I think they should. Obviously the buyout markets, there's always going to be a center, you know, just get like a low maintenance center that it doesn't matter if he gets like a few DNPs like here and there, but he's just there and ready, especially foul trouble, injuries, COVID protocol, all that just kind of stacks up. So, you know, even there's some free agents that would even make sense, like Ersan Ilyasova, Dwayne Dedman. There's players that are better than like Jones or, you know, Frank. I would trust Frank a little bit more than Jones, because at least, you know, there's a chance offensively he makes the defense respect you by spacing the floor. So ultimately, though, I think that's their biggest weakness coming into the year. I was talking about that. Just I think on paper when they're healthy, it's not an issue. But if something happens, then, you know, there could be some real issues.
Yeah, something to keep an eye on. I mean, again, so much of what we're talking about is a luxury in some ways, that's sort of like the main focus or the main need for this team as it's currently constructed, healthy. But, you know, it is something that you could see affecting them, or, you know, just to have like another quote unquote traditional center. I think, like we saw, you know, for instance, with the Lakers against the Nuggets, like it just helped that they had Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee as an option in a series like that, yeah. Where, you know, they didn't have to have Anthony Davis try to guard Jokic and get into foul trouble and just exhaust himself. Like, they just had bodies that were capable. And I think if the Suns can find another one of those, that'll be pretty helpful. But I mean, honestly though, like, it's pretty cool to see how hard this rotation is already to break into. Like, Nader's not playing, Moore's not playing. Kaminsky came here, you know, and to much fanfare, and he's already just relegated to the 11th man or whatever. It's pretty impressive how quickly they've coalesced into a rotation that works and that they're already winning so much with it.
Yeah, and Moore's not playing with Payne out too. So that's just another layer. It's just crazy. Like, that's why at the trade deadline, if they make a move, it's not going to be a guard, obviously. A wing, like, maybe if, like, they just want one more. But I think Nader is, like, fine, like, where he's at. So I think everything just kind of points to just finding another big, especially, like, the point you mentioned, just in a playoff series, you're going to need some physicality and players to kind of burn fouls in some stretches, and it'd be much more ideal to have someone that isn't one of your key rotation players that can do that. And so, yeah, I think it's definitely something that we'll talk more about as the deadline approaches.
For sure. This week we have Wizards on Monday, and then home for three against Atlanta, Golden State, and then a rematch against Indiana a week from the last game on the 16th that Saturday. So some very winnable games upcoming, but that Pacers rematch will be an interesting one, and we will be back next Monday to talk about it. Thanks again for coming on, Brandon.
Yep, appreciate it.